This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. And here is where we talk to knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs that try to help them. Today, we're going to talk about character education, what it is and how you can implement it in a school, and our parents, how they can do it. I want to remind everybody there's a chat room if you're listening live on K4HD.com. And there's a chat section. You can ask questions or make comments, and we'll try to get to them as we talk. So today, we have Marianne Campbell here. Marianne, glad to have you here. Good morning, good afternoon, I guess it is now.
Yes, good afternoon, thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about character education in action, and Marianne Campbell is Executive Director of Glenholm School in Washington, Connecticut, a school that's a very highly respected school. It's been in, worked for a long time. They work with kids with learning differences, some on the autism spectrum. And they initiated a few years ago a character education program that's been very successful. So, Marianne, first off, would you define what you have in mind when you mean character education? Because that's been around for quite a while, and there's a lot of different temptations. So, as you see it, what are you talking about when you talk about character education?
Well, to begin with, character education in the school environment, it's one of the most important yet simple approaches that is to be considered, is a common language. We identified certain words that we could define and equally agree upon. We led off with the Josephson Institute and Character Counts program back in the mid-90s, which is where we really established a foundation for understanding words that we all understood were in the back of our mind, and we brought them to the front of our mind, defined them, and taught them to our staff and our children. And not that we taught them, but we basically reviewed how that could work in a treatment environment such as what we have here. So we have been at it for quite a long time and have seen enormous effects, both for the adolescent population that we now serve, which was different when we started, where we can balance the competition and the disrespect that kind of can come with adolescence in this environment. It's a very accepting and receptive environment as a result of the kinds of words that we speak and display and model every day.
Could you give us some example? What words do you have in mind, and what do you mean? Give us an example of words and how you deal with them.
Well, one of them is honesty. You know, we're talking about being truthful and being sincere and not to betray a trust or mislead people, or even omission is dishonest to some degree, not to be devious or clever, and those are the kinds of words. So that's one of them. Another one that we speak about is responsibility. It is being responsible for yourself and your own actions and being, you know, certainly consider the consequences that are affected on others when you make certain decisions, being reliable, basically looking at your own integrity and do what you say, say what you mean, and mean what you say, and setting a good example for those around you and your friends, and being the best you that you can be. And for young people who really do like to achieve, they really respond to that, and they respond to helping others as well. Caring is another, caring and kindness are kind of interchangeable. We use that as well, which really kind of has a very nice reflection to responsibility, because you can do things for others in the way of sharing and compassion. And in our environment, this is something that often kids really struggle with, and compassion, empathy, and those types of things. Living by the golden rule, helping out. We do a lot with community service where this is demonstrated and acted upon. The other is that we pay attention to is community service. Citizenship is where it started. And we do a lot in the community with the elderly, with the animal welfare, so the kids are able to go discuss why they're out there to help out and being part of a larger community other than the school, and taking the time to reflect on their way back and how did it go and where did they make a difference in another person's life and how did it make them feel.
Well, the first thought I had on that is everybody's familiar with those words. We hear a lot about them, but it sounds like you take them very seriously, where sometimes honesty is, sort of slided over and you can twist it a little bit, and it sounds like you're very serious about that. And that is really, another idea I thought I had was living a life with integrity. Sounds like that might describe what character education is.
I would agree with you. One that I hadn't gotten to yet was respect and treating others the way you would like to be treated once you define how you would like to be treated. Being courteous and being polite and being tolerant, being accepting of individual differences. Many programs over the course of my career have addressed diversity. I think that all of these together really embrace differences in others. And of course, when you work in an environment such as ours that has many treatment issues with each and every child, they're accepting of each other's disability, if you will.
How do kids react to it when a child is enrolled and then they're presented with this, which is probably a little bit different than they've been getting back in back in their home community? How do they react to this when it's been explained to them what's expected?
Well, there's a delight here in that question that I always enjoy answering, is that young people, and I don't think that older people are that different, but young people really have an enthusiastic way of wanting to fit in. And so when they come to the school, they're possibly, again, these are not words that are hard to understand, but when they're at play and they're operationalized and people are talking about it more frequently, they're very quick to step up to the plate.
Well, I think kids have a natural tendency towards, honesty towards all of these things, and they see the lack of it all too often in communities. So I would expect a little bit of, oh, finally somebody's taking all this seriously.
Well, we have a wonderful opportunity to use everything in our school campus to practice and demonstrate these words in a very familiar way. We have dogs that we work with, and so we have a responsibility to the dog. We have a responsibility to be respectful. We have a responsibility to take care of the dog. We have horses. We have a complete and full equestrian program with many animals that we take care of, and we look at animal therapy as another element of this, but it also has a reciprocation to allow the students to display the character development pieces that we know and believe is very important for all of the children and us as adults. Mm-hmm.
Well, how did this come about? I understand that this was something you specifically imposed here a few years ago and developed. And how did it come about, decided to go this direction or make character education? It sounds like it's the foundation of your program.
It is. It is. To kind of go back in time, I think one of the things to understand is we have been here for many, many years, and we were seeing some different things in our environment of our school community and the students that were coming to us who were really less enthusiastic about experience remorse when something went wrong and that they were responsible for. That really took us by surprise. The things that we identified in our culture, of our employee culture, was that there were subcultures with really a few less amount of shared values or norms or traditions. So we really had to work on two levels, when you have a weak culture, you have less cohesion, and you have sort of a politicized internal environment that sometimes is hostile to change, which we did experience. And when we started to move on this...
That was on the part of the staff primarily, I presume.
Correct. The students were sort of the, you know, at the other end of the learning environment. It was being taught to them. It wasn't something that they terribly resisted, because when we actually got to the point of introducing it to the students, we made it incredibly fun. And the students had a great time writing poems and singing songs and making movies and doing things that they totally enjoyed when it involved other people. And it does involve other people. So it was something that really strengthened our school community, and it also put us in a situation where, from an employee perspective, you know, we were in a new place with a new type of employee.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that is the foundation. What are the other types of treatment you do, or things to supplement or add to that? What's going on in the rest of the school to support this attachment or relationship approach?
Well, again, as I said earlier, is that we have a lot of activities, both obviously during the school day. There's a pretty clear boundary environment that most everyone would understand that you have in a school, when we look at going from class to class and holding the door open and doing things for others and supporting others when they're in need of some support in the school day. Academically, it works beautifully. They're there for one another. In the after-school part of the program, since we have, you know, there isn't math or reading after school, but there is learning after school. And so this is a learning opportunity when we have a well-developed arts program, performing arts, music, choral. And again, that's, you know, there was a time when everyone wanted to sing solo because they couldn't sing in parts, but now we sing in parts because it's part of how we roll out when we work together and what our responsibilities are in light of that. We have the ropes course, which is another trusting others, and we really pull that into the environment of these elements and speak to it. And understand that when we're on the zip line, that there are other people that are there for you, and as well as, you know, riding the horses or part of the afternoon schedule of robotics, how you work on building a robot and looking at how you work together as a group. And so the staff are all trained and the students are all responsive to the cueing or the reminding of these elements of character development that they're actually here to follow up on and see to it that they are displaying it.
Okay, so you have basically as a community, about how many students do you have?
Yeah, we generally roll between 80 and 100.
Okay, so you have a community of 80 to 100 students plus the staff. So you described things that any community would have, a sort of a self-contained community, the horses, the classes, and all these various things. And so you're using those all, I'm trying to summarize, but you're using those all as as props or tools in order to get across the character education.
Absolutely. These are opportunities to increase positive messages about the importance of good character in their activities when they're with one another, and that they're in a safe environment. You know, many of the students who have come to Glen Home have been in other settings where they were victims of being bullied and they were not in a safe environment. So, you know, it's one thing that we have to also promote positive messages in order to have the students feel that they are in a safe setting.
Okay, how do you promote that safe setting? You know, like kids, I presume, would be taught that bullying is not right, but I presume it happens at times. So what are the consequences when it does happen?
Well, we have the program is generally a positive environment. It's basically utilizes positive behavior intervention supports. And generally, when things go awry or a student fails to, you know, live up to the standard or acts inappropriately, then we have things that we call positive practices, where they kind of are responsible for recognizing where and what they have done, and if they have offended another individual, and then they work on positive practicing, where they will interact with the students in a positive way and practice that with a number of people during the course of the day so that we can give them a replacement activity and action as opposed to what to do when that negative threat presents itself to the student.
So they're given and encouraged with positive responses how to handle the deal. So they're learning how to handle in negative situations too, and that's partially in preparation for when they go back home, I presume.
Absolutely, and we also do a lot of work with parents where we inform them and we try to teach this and open dialogue with parents of what we are teaching them. We have in the past, and we present a lot of presentations on character education so that they can understand what their students are enduring on the day-to-day basis and that they can practice that when they are home.
Well, this might not be a fair question, but how is your approach to character education different than a lot of other schools and places, but a lot of other schools say they teach character education? How is yours different than theirs, and maybe what you do that they don't necessarily do or can't do?
Well, I think that we're probably not much different in identifying what it is we would like to teach. I think where we are different is that, number one, if you're looking at a public school, they have the students during the day. We have them 24 hours a day, so we can do a lot more over a shorter amount of time. We teach it to the parents. I don't know that all schools do that. Maybe they do, and therefore we wouldn't be that different. The other thing that I think is probably the most important is that there's a consistency and predictability to this that everyone is expected to know it, apply it, be the role model for it, expect it, advocate for it, and they all know that the leadership, and because, you know, basically this is something I walked into accidentally in the mid-90s, I totally believe in it. I believe in it for a number of reasons. The workplace, it is a wonderful, these are wonderful tools to work together and to work in a fair environment where people are willing to collaborate and we recognize what our strengths are and we certainly recognize what our flaws are, and another person can be there to support the person who's weak in this area because they're strong in that area, and it isn't about competition or feeling that, you know, you are made lesser of because you don't have a certain skill. We work together to be supportive of one another in the workplace. Great role model for children. So with young people, they see what we're doing and they emulate that and they practice that. So those are the kinds of things that I think that we stand apart on, and it is the consistency and the true belief that we have in it on a day-to-day basis. You know, the beauty of it is that what you can learn here, you can become when you leave here. And a lot of people have come in and said, you know, I'm out grocery shopping, and I know that we all are responsible for the environment here, but I find myself picking up the papers at Walmart on the ground. So I said, well, you're doing very well then. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me play a little bit of the devil's advocate, because I'd imagine a lot of the parents are either successful in the world in their careers, and they object and say, that's naive, you can't do it, or they come with that attitude. How do you deal with the parent that's skeptical of it?
It's not that terribly hard. The skepticism is short-lived because everyone knows the words and everyone would like those things to happen to them. They may often indicate that in their work world that these things aren't present. And my response often, and I meet with every parent prior to the enrollment, that not everyone is a believer of this, and but you still can want it, and if you desire it, you can make it happen. You get to choose your choices. And at that particular juncture, everyone has a kind of a universal understanding. They may not feel it's adequate in their work environment, but I'm not asking them to change their work environment. I'm asking them to understand, here's what we need to do for your child. And they generally agree. I've never had opposition.
Mm-hmm. I presume they can look around the school and see how the kids are behaving and see, hey, this works.
Mm-hmm. It does work. And when you look at the environment, and I know you have looked at our website, and it's a very beautiful place, and the kids take wonderful care of it, as do we.
Okay, well, that's all part of the character education. Well, that's marvelous. So what do you think...
could be adopted from your school, say in a public school, that they, as you said, they just have them in the day, so they don't have the 24 hours, and you have a definite advantage. But what could be adopted from it in the public school in a way that works? Because I've seen a lot of places that do it, but they get into the posters, they get into, sometimes it seems like meaningless exercises they go into rote. But how would you describe, if say you were talking to a principal, public school principal, that wanted to initiate it, what would you, in their environment, would you suggest they approach it? How would they approach it?
Well, I have done over many years, I've done a lot of public school training for teachers and administrators, and there are some that really nail it and are able to do it, make it fresh every day. I think where it does, you're exactly right, where it falls apart when it becomes routine, it's rote, and people forget about it even though the poster is up. There are things that in any school has a myriad of traditions that go on. They have their academic day. They have parent-teacher conferences. High schools have proms. They have dances. They have all kinds of socials. They do community service. They sell products for fundraisers. All of those things can be associated with whatever words you choose that you want to teach. So if you're running a fundraiser or a booster club is doing something, that's something that you can do with community service or a citizen, a school citizen. You know, there's a number of ways to associate that and make that your leaderboard and your activity your secondary. And those consistent approaches can be successful, but you have to be diligent and persistent to keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You can do rewards, you can do awards, you can do all kinds of sending letters home to parents. Parents love to get letters about how well their child is doing. There are endless opportunities, but we as adults tend to fall into habituation quicker than we fall into creative new ideas. It's just the way the world works.
Yeah, well, okay, well, sounds like the parents are lucky to have this opportunity for their kids. Could you talk about an example of how a kid responds? Maybe you get a kid that's been very skeptical of adults, very skeptical of this positive thinking, and could you describe a little bit how they adjust to and get with it at your program? A couple of examples, can you think of a couple of examples?
I think probably the most powerful examples are that of the performing arts and the choral performances that we conduct over the course of our school year. And oftentimes we will get a new student who doesn't believe any of that rigmarole, if you will. And I'm kind of generalizing because it happens for such a short stint in that. Again, what I was talking about earlier with regard to the types of kids that we see are usually those that have been victimized by some bullying because of their awkwardness or maybe their disability. And to be in an environment where somebody is, from the day that they walk in the door, another student is there for them to help show them the way and help them understand the types of things that we all participate in. And while we have had an instance or several that were the kids were just really not buying into it, it is generally in the performing arts when there is a improvisational opportunity and or a choral where the kids can do some chorus and or music performing. They get up on stage. We have a beautiful arts center. It's fairly new. And being on stage is different than being in the gym or being in front of a classroom. And suddenly that support from those that are behind the curtain and helping them with their lyrics and tuning up the guitar, it all seems to come together for them. So those are the kinds of, when I look at activities both in the equestrian program or if we're out doing a softball game or a soccer game or a basketball game, it is how the children support one another and interact that they catch on very quickly and become an active participant.
Okay, well, we need to take a break for an important announcement. This announcement is Saving Teens. Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative, I think is the full name. I'm on the board, but it's called Saving Teens. They raise funds in order to help parents without the financial resources to send them to therapeutic boarding schools, wilderness therapy, Glen Holmes School would be a possibility. And so this is Lon Woodbury, and I'm talking with Mary Ann Campbell. She's the executive director for Glen Holmes School in Connecticut, and we're talking about character education. So we'll be right back in about 1 minute.
Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed in April of 2004 when parents of struggling teens realized that the help they were able to access for their child would prove to be prohibitively expensive for other struggling families. Saving Teens' mission is to assist troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. We work with the therapeutic program industry to fund and support families with financial limitations as they complete the comprehensive program that they desperately need but may not be able to afford. In partnership with programs, educational consultants, and the family, Saving Teens establishes a payment plan for services that include scholarship, family contribution, and Saving Teens funds. Our goal is to provide a total solution to troubled teens and their families with a methodology that incorporates financial and emotional support throughout a 12 to 24 month process of evaluation, intervention, and education. To donate or to get more information, please visit us at our website, www.savingteens.org. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're back. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and we're talking with Mary Ann Campbell about character education. And Mary Ann is the executive director of Glen Holmes School in Connecticut, and the foundation of her school is teaching character education, which is something very, very important and seems to be very, very successful. So let's talk a little bit more details on this, because you have some questions on the chat. How much would this type of program cost? And the answer is, it's expensive because you have good quality of staff and credentialed staff. But how long does it last? How do parents deal with people being gone from home? These are some more general questions. You want to answer those, Marianne?
Yes, I can. Yes, it is an expensive program. We do have scholarships that we do offer, generally on a partial basis. We've just started to raise funds for scholarship because many parents out there have struggled, and we have some family members and friends who understand the struggle that parents go through for funding for such programs as this. And we do have some help, so I do want to share that with you, as well as, you know, we're over $100,000 per year. Generally, students stay with us. It's contingent often on what we've found over the years is contingent on the age range that they arrive. We are middle school and high school, so we go to 6th to 12th grade. Anyone that comes in around the 6th grade may stay a year, possibly two. Sometimes they will stay until the demarcation of 8th grade to high school. Those that come in the high school years might stay through the 4 years, may stay for two. The older a child might be, oftentimes it is helpful for them to stay a little bit longer than 1 year. We'd like to say on average 2 years, but it is very individualized, and it's a question that I've answered for the better part of 39 years, and it still eludes me.
Well, and it's a question, and a lot of people, it's outside of the normal, but what I found
is that many times these private schools with high tuitions, people say, how can people afford it? And well, if they're worried enough about their child and their child's future, they generally can, many of them can put something together. So that's part of it. It's the motivation and the question about how do parents go dealing with kids being gone from home. Oftentimes the kids, now this is more for therapeutic boarding schools, but I presume it's the same for you, things are so bad at home. Now, if the child has a learning difference, needs into Glen Holmes School, and everything's falling apart in their life, a lot of things come out of that, and they desperately need more than just a counseling or a tutor or something like that. Would you like to elaborate on that, Mary Ann?
Yeah, that's very true. Some of the things that we see in over the years and that I could address is the fact that there are some students that come to us that have learning differences and things are falling apart in the home, and some parents do seek school district funding for such a program like ours or similar. And the work that I find that we've been able to promote is the work that not only do with the child, but we also try to work with families. And even when we have an international population, we try to work with those families. And we have people from your neck of the woods over on the West Coast, and we work with those families. We go and see them. They come here. We're on the phone. We try to really look at the whole of the child's environment rather than just the whole child. We look at the family as well. And that family work is very, very useful. We do family workshops. We do webinars with families so that they can come into the workshop if they can't attend. So we try to remain very, very connected. Oftentimes, kids that come from a dysfunctional environment that they can't cope with some of the things that are going on because of their disability when they are in their home, there is a sense of relief for both the family and the child. So everyone kind of goes into a rest mode for a certain period of time, and that's very useful for families. Families are under a great deal of stress when they're in these situations where the resources aren't resulting in anything real positive, but they just continue to go. One of the things that we have here, and most programs, some programs like us have, we have the complete clinical side. We have the therapy. We have the therapeutic milieu. We have everyone that is trained. We have all of our faculty, both in the education, obviously, our college graduates and professionals in their field, as with the clinicians, and those that work in the boarding faculty or degree professionals as well. So, you know, everyone it's very clear what they're responsible for and the consistency and the predictability that we promote and then promote in the home is very helpful. We do in-home consultations to help people with the home environment. Sometimes the environment is conducive to sort of a chaotic setting. So we help parents really work on home schedules and responsibilities and maybe how the rooms are set up or where the child or the young person gets their releases and their satisfaction. Many of our students come to us and are really infatuated with the computers, and it's a negative. It's not a positive. So we work with families on that as we work with them here at the school.
You know, one of the things I think getting into the parent's head, a parent that decides to send a kid to a residential program, therapeutic boarding school, wilderness, for learning differences, any of those problems, they get to the question of the child's future. If the child's future is the point to where the child's future is problematical, if they'll ever get it together, or take a chance on somebody that can help them have a better future for the child. And that's where the parents are at. And when you're talking about these costs, how long, and all these other details, the important thing is the future of the child and what does the child need. And if this is where the child can get what they need better than anyplace else, that's the question that goes. Could you add anything to that, Marianne?
Well, I could add a question that I often ask parents. Well, there are certain things that parents seem to accommodate or accept in their child because of their disability. I ask them to think about their child right here today, on the day that I ask the question, how do they see their child at the age of 35?
Mm-hmm.
And that brings in a myriad of images and fear. And then we're now having a new conversation.
Because the parent, at that age, the parents would be towards retirement.
Likely, and this child would have to be on their own, and it's on their own that often is what puts the fear in them, because they would be on their own making their own choices in a world where there are many choices, and they know the choices that they are making right now with a limited amount of choices are providing negative results. So you look at 35 and say, okay, now you're older and you have the freedom to make all the choices that you want to make whenever you want to make them. What is that really going to look like?
That's going to be a little scary to some of them.
Absolutely.
And that gets their attention. That sounds like a really good question. Examples, I always like to think in terms of examples of... Mm-hmm. Of a kid, a boy, girl that enrolled there, was very skeptical of things, was having horrendous problems at home. What are the processes? Again, pick out an example. You don't have to identify them anyway, but to pick out an example of a child and what the process they went through. What could parents? I guess what I'm getting to is what the parents could expect if they enrolled their child there at Glen Home. What could they expect in the first few months until the child really gets it?
Well, you speak in the terms of examples. I have so many students I've seen over the years. They kind of may come out as a composite, but they're very similar to what you're asking for. Oftentimes, the environment in the home that is really under a lot of duress and the inability to cope with all of the activity that the child is displaying will come here. And the first thing that we often look for is, what are the child's strengths? We always look for their strengths. And we look to maximize their strengths and work with them on giving them a lot of positive and a lot of support on the things that they do well. And then some of the things they're not doing so well kind of fall into place. We have sort of a very comprehensive token economy system that they earn points for. They earn privileges. It's set up, I say oftentimes, and I don't mean to belittle it, but oftentimes it's sort of like work. You know, you go to work, you perform, you get paid. So they earn points for the way that they conduct themselves in the course of a day. At the end of the day, they earn privileges for those points. And so this kind of propels into different status levels that they earn over time. And, you know, it is through that process they feel that they're achieving something, they're treated positively, and they're able to understand the order. Again, we go back to the two words I said earlier, which is consistency and predictability. They know where they're going to be. They have less choices to make in the very early part of their admission. And then over time, they learn how to make those choices. And again, going back to the character education piece, is it the right thing to do? Is it the right thing for all people? Who benefits? And we teach how to ask these questions of oneself. And then oftentimes, you know, parents in our environment, you know, I have to say that, you know, within 3 months' time, they feel that they see a different child. And think, well, maybe it's time for them to come home. But it's not time for them to come home. There's a honeymoon period oftentimes where kids are very willing to be part of the pack and want to do their best. And then there are times when it really does fall apart when they go home and then they regress back to the behaviors that they were displaying in the home. And we've got to go back to square one, and we limit the visitation. We have the parent come to campus. We do more practicing on-site with family gatherings rather than in the home environment. We do the in-home consultation to support the home environment in such a way that the child knows we're there, the parents know what we're all expecting. We work together as a collaborative team to getting to the right place.
Okay, I presume you hear from alumni, students that come back periodically to revisit the roots of it. What kind of stories have you seen? And I presume that we can start with most of the kids when they enrolled, their future was problematical. That might have been pretty drab. They might have had a lot of talents but couldn't access them. Might have been very scary. And then the adults, the graduates that come back that were successfully completed the program, what do they look like? What do they say?
Well, I'll tell you, we have alumni day every August, and the students come back, and they tell us wonderful stories. We've had students who really struggled in the academic world and were behind in education, and were able to, you know, get up to speed here in our education program, and they learned the soundboard in the Performing Arts Center and how to do sound and lighting. We had a young man who came back, and he's working in 5 different theaters in New York City. He's doing their sound, and he's working in their lighting environment. So we've had some great successes as kids going off to college. We had a young man many years ago who left us and went to Brown and then went on to get his master's degree, and he's working in an engineering environment. The common thread that I often hear is when the students come back and say, number one, they'll say, I should have listened to you from the start. Because sometimes they wanted to sort of be a little bit oppositional. And then the other thing that was a common remark, and we've really tried to work on that, is that our students are very busy 16 hours a day. And they didn't really know how to manage free time when they left us. So they pointed that out to us. So we've really incorporated that into our day so that the students can learn how to do things and choose to do things on your own.
Oh, that's really good. So you're getting some good feedback from them. On the alumni day in August, how many show up typically in a year?
Well, this year we had our largest. In 1 year, the largest we had was this year. We had 27 We have an alumni that found us on the internet. He was here in 1969 and left in 1970. So he's our alum chair. And then we had some students. Most of the students that have been coming back over the last several years when we started this were more recent. Somehow others have kind of reached out to us. We had five students that came back that were here in the 80s, and then the remainder of them were more recent in the last five or six years. So about 27 was the largest number, and that's pretty good for us.
Do you get a lot of referrals from graduates and the graduate parents for possible enrollments?
Yes, we do from the parents.
Mm-hmm. So, where? How do people find about you that your students? I presume some for educational consultants, some from the internet site, some from referrals. So, talk a little bit about how parents have found you.
Yes, they do find us, as you had suggested, through the internet and through educational consultants and through medical professionals and psychiatric professionals, as well as I find that probably most is word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Other parents talking to families that they were familiar with, and you know, obviously, when you have a child with special needs or things that you know you're not able to cope with, you generally know other people or have similar experiences. Not very many, but you do, and you look for certain assistance in other programs or therapists or whatever, and you meet other people and they talk, and that is something that we are very attentive to.
What would be some of the most important factors that would make it, at first blush, to rule out enrolling a child, to reject them?
Oh, for our program?
For
a rule
program.
Out would... I'm sorry, could you say that
yeah,
again?
Go, yeah, yeah. To rule out, the things that rule out would rule out even considering enrolling a child.
Well, we rule out AWOL, the students who run away. We are in the middle of a rural part of this state. It's something that we don't treat. We don't treat fire setters. We don't treat sex offenders. And other than that, we're sort of in the learning disabled, ADD, ADHD, OCD. We'll treat mild conduct disorder, but not severe conduct disorder.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like that's your strength, that your kids, the kids you describe, generally are a more mellow bunch compared to some of the kids.
Well, I would say that, you know, the way that we've defined them over time is fragile, because there are a lot of programs in our tri-state area or even on the eastern seaboard that do treat certain types of disabilities and things in children that they don't treat the fragile child, and that's basically our niche population.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have about 3 minutes left. Could you explain, if somebody was interested in hearing more about it or maybe considering their child, how would they find out more information and how would they contact the school or learn more about the school?
Well, they can learn more about the school by going to our website. It's theglenholmschool.org. And there's everything there you could possibly want to know. It should be very interesting. It gives you some moving parts, and there's some video, and it kind of will tell you all about the experiences of the child. It'll give you our admissions criteria, who you can contact. I'm on there. You can call me. Love to talk to parents. It's always a very enlightening experience to share what is happening with people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can call the school at 860-868-7377. That's another way to reach us.
Okay, that is in the main office. Can they reach any of the staff?
Yes, they can reach anyone. They can speak to mm-hmm. admission staff. They can ask to speak with the executive director and whomever they'd like to speak with. Everyone's here to help. Your needs for your children are a priority in everyone's lives, and we understand that. And we work every day to make certain that the child will have the opportunity. I believe every child deserves a chance, and I can't think of anything better to do with my adult career is than to help young people who often can't help themselves and others can't find the resources.
Mm-hmm. Seems to me like the school has earned some awards. Is that true?
Yes.
And what are some of those?
Yes, we have. Oh, come on, Lon.
Oh, just a few.
We have, over the course of time, we've done a lot with different environments like the Schools for Ethical Education with David Longard. We still work with him. He does Laws of Life, and our students always participate in telling their story about life. And for the past 3 years, we've had a winner every year. So in Connecticut. So the top 10, three of our students over the past 3 years have won that award. We've gotten some awards from the Character Education Partnership and recognition. We've worked with the Ethics Institute, Dr. Matt Davidson, over the years. And we've gotten things from the governor's office for character education many, many years ago. We had Tom Selleck come to campus and come to Hartford and do some presentations on good character, and all schools from all over the state came to the Bushnell Theater, and we gave out awards for kids who did wonderful things for other people, random acts of kindness.
I'm convinced you're well connected in all the right places. Okay. Well, we've run out of time. The engineers is motioning me that I've got to close it up. But Marianne, thank you very much. This has been great.
Great. It's been a pleasure talking to you again.
This is Lon Woodbury. Yeah, you're more than welcome, and thank you. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. We've been talking with Marianne Campbell about character education, using an example of what she's been doing at the school that she's executive director of, the Glenholm School in Connecticut. And be sure to come back next week, where we'll have another guest.